Again, we'll be in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 this morning. Already gone over the chart there before the questions start, but we'll do that again. Just drawing a connection between what's said here in 2 Corinthians 8 and 9 with 1 Corinthians 16. Of course, those two are connected, as well as what Paul says in Romans 15 and Acts 24. Put it all together, get an idea of this offering that they're talking about. Again, we're in the second section of the book where Paul encourages generosity, and then we'll wrap up with chapters 10 to 13 where Paul defends apostleship by answering his critics. So we had this chart. Again, we've looked at it before, through it. I'll put everything up there, at least how I answered it. But we put all these together. We see 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9, 1 Corinthians 16, Romans 15, Acts 24. We see who all was contributing, that it was Macedonia, Achaia, and Galatia. These churches were all taking part in gathering funds to each send to saints in Jerusalem. Those who were needy, those who were among Paul's nation. And all of them, Paul was the apostle overseeing it. Paul's the one writing about it. But we see other people involved in that. In 2 Corinthians, we learn about Titus and two chosen men that are involved in coming and gathering that. He tells us in 1 Corinthians that if they wanted, he would go, and whoever they appointed would take their money and deliver it to those saints in Jerusalem. And then, of course, Paul's speaking in Acts 24 as well. All took place around the same time. It was during that third journey of Paul as he was going about preaching the gospel. We see that he was also collecting these funds, and he would deliver them to Jerusalem at the end of that third journey. And so we looked at a map of this so we get an idea of the region. So when Paul wrote 1 Corinthians, he talked about he'd given instruction to the churches of Galatia. And then he talks about Macedonia and their generous giving, and then Achaia, the region that includes Corinth. So these churches, primarily Gentiles, are contributing to the needs of these Jewish saints in Jerusalem. And again, Paul is the one involved in delivering that to them. So we keep that in mind as we consider what Paul writes to the Corinthians, that it wasn't just Corinth that was doing this. Paul had given instruction to other churches. He talked about the example of Macedonia and their giving. And so that's where we start in our questions, like Paul does in chapter 8, the example of the Macedonians. So we see these ways in which this offering is described in terms that certainly go beyond money. He's not just talking about money, but he's talking about the generosity that's there. He talks about all of these other things that describe the gift and their attitude toward it. And so we noted a number of these as we went through the text. But in chapter 8 and verse 1, he talks about what the Macedonians had done is the grace of God, which has been given in the churches of Macedonia. And so their generous giving was connected to the grace that they had received, the grace of God. And so we see that throughout the text. He keeps going back and calls it a gracious work relating to that idea. So we have the grace of God. He talks about, despite their circumstances, that it was in their abundance of joy that they took part in this. So he talks about a great ordeal of affliction, but there's an abundance of joy. He talks about their deep poverty, but he says it overflowed in the wealth of their liberality. So again, we're seeing this idea of their desire to engage in this work, that it was a joy to them. It was something that they did willingly with no reservation, that they did it liberally or with liberality. He says they gave beyond their ability. What does that tell us about their attitude in this work?
Willing to sacrifice
basic needs. They gave beyond their ability. It means that there was some deal of sacrifice, and therefore they were willing to go without so that they could supply for their brethren in Jerusalem. So they gave beyond their ability. They gave, he tells us, of their own accord in verse 3. That's going to be a theme that comes up throughout these two chapters, that Paul's making a distinction that it's not that I'm commanding this. It's not that I'm forcing you to do this. It's not that it's an obligation, but it's something that you're willingly engaging in. They gave of their own accord. He talks about in verse 4 that they were begging us with much urging for the favor of participation in the support of the saints. And so, again, not only this willing giving, this giving beyond their ability, but he talks about their initiative in it, that they begged to be a part of this. They wanted to share in this work, in this support of the saints. They wanted fellowship in the giving of this gift. He talks about they first gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. And so why did they go above and beyond even what was expected of them? Right? They gave beyond their ability. They gave beyond what was expected because of this attitude. They gave themselves to the Lord and then to us by the will of God. So I asked the question, and really you can answer it two ways, but was it easy for the Macedonians to contribute? Yeah, based on their circumstance, based on the conditions they found themselves in, affliction and poverty, certainly it was not easy to give. But is there a sense in which it was easy to give? Yeah, their desire they wanted to? The decision, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so you kind of get both of those at the same time. So their circumstances certainly made it a challenge. They're commended for that, but certainly through their desire, their planning, their attitude, it was an easy thing for them to give in that regard. So we kind of see both of those present here. Who's identified as the recipient of the offering? Right? In verse 4, he just says the saints. We go elsewhere. We see 1 Corinthians 16 talks about Jerusalem, but those other things. But just based on the text, he identifies them as saints here. The support of the saints, he says in verse 4. So another question. Ultimately, what motivated such generosity among the Macedonians? Love of the brethren. Yeah, that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so certainly all that there, that their love for the brethren, their thankfulness to God for the blessings, that even though their circumstances described as poverty, they were able to give beyond their ability because of what God had given. And so all that together motivated this generosity in the Macedonians, that they so willingly gave, that Paul uses them as an example here. He exemplifies their giving. And uses it to encourage Corinth to complete what they had started. And so, again, there in section B, so chapter 8, verse 6 to 8, verse 15, it said, continue to note the language used to describe this gift and the attitude associated with it. Again, it would be helpful to mark if that's something that you use. But what are some of those? Just throw them out. What are some of the ways in which it's described in the text here? Yeah, gracious work. We see that kind of time and again here. Verse 6, verse 7, we see it describes it as that way again in verse 19, this gracious work. And so again, relating it as he did in verse 1, the grace of God which was given in the churches. He talks about this being a gracious work. In the other ways it's described. Yeah, it talks about the sincerity of your love. That by Corinth completing what they had started, he said it was proving the sincerity of their love. Anything else? Yeah, readiness. Verse 11 and verse 12, he talks about their readiness to take part in this. So all that gives us an idea, certainly, of their attitude and how this is described. It's a gracious work, supplying for the need of the saints. It's proving the sincerity of their love. What task? This is question 2 on page 26 under section B. What task had Paul given to Titus? Yeah, complete the work he'd done. He'd begun and then this work, and he tells them that as he had previously made a beginning, verse 6, he would also complete, again, this gracious work as well in Corinth. And so he has a role in that. So Titus is sent. They ask him to go to complete what he had started in them. What was Paul's desire for the Corinthians? to abound in it, to finish it. He talks about they'd started with Titus. He talks about you abound in all these other areas. He talks about faith and utterance and knowledge and earnestness and the love we inspired in you. Or some translations are into that, your love for us. But in faith, utterance, knowledge, earnestness, and love, he says, you abound, you excel in those. See to it that you also abound in this gracious work. And so you excel in these other areas, you abound, you're increasing in these other areas. Now continue that also in this gracious work. That's the question, does Paul command them to give? Why or why not? Yeah, wanted it to come from their heart. He was all throughout this section describing it as a grace, not an obligation. Doesn't want those to give grudgingly or of necessity. Wants them to give cheerfully. And again, this instruction is based on their promise to help. They'd promised to help. They'd begun this. He's urging them to continue it. Certainly there was instruction involved. There was commands that were given. In 1 Corinthians chapter 16, right, they had asked some question about giving, and he says, as I gave orders to the churches of Galatia, so you also must do in relation to how they give on the first day of the week when you come together as you have made the plan for. So he all throughout this section is describing that it should be something that is done willingly. It's something that's a grace. It's something that is done freely and not by obligation. I don't know if question five was the clearest way to word the question, but we'll see how you answer it. What did he repeatedly appeal to throughout this chapter? And I gave some instances here, 8 verse 1 to 5, 8 verse 9, 8 verse 24. It talks about examples. He talks about the grace of God in Corinth, or in Macedonia, 8 verse 1 to 5. He gives the example of Christ and what he gave, that the grace of Christ described as that though he was rich, for your sake he became poor, so that you through his poverty might become rich. And then in verse 24, he talks about your love for them, but following through with that, giving the proof of your love for them. And it's the way Paul worded it here, but what was his opinion, or yours might have advice or judgment regarding their gift in verses 10 and 11? He goes on to talk about equality in this section in verses 13 to 15. But what about in verses 8 through or 10 through 11? Finish what you started. He says it would be to your advantage that you were the first to begin a year ago, not only to do this, but also to desire. But now finish doing it also, so that just as there was the readiness to desire it, so there may also be the completion of it by your ability. So you began this. Finish what you started. You have this readiness, and they're commended for that. But he says, let that be matched by your completing it out of what you have, is how the ESV renders it. But it's this idea here, complete what you started. It's to your benefit to follow through with what you had begun, that you had this desire, you had this ambition before, and so it's good for you to go ahead and finish that. Comments or questions about that? Certainly. Yeah. Prove it through your living. Prove it through your action. That commitment that you made, even kind of relating that generally to our confession or becoming Christians. That's a commitment that you make. Follow through with that. Live it out in your life. All right now, there's this idea of equality. This was mentioned before in the last question. But what's the Old Testament example that he gives to illustrate this principle of equality? And then with that, how does it illustrate his point? Yeah, the gathering of the manna in Exodus chapter 16. And how does that illustrate this principle that he's speaking of with equality? It took what you needed and left the rest for the others. And even with that, he does describe in Exodus that some gathered more and some less, but all had what they needed. And so there's this idea here as it relates to this, that it's not about everyone having in the gift of this. It's not about everyone having that perfect equality in what they have in resources, but it's that idea of their needs are met. So those that have more, they supply the need of those that have less. And that's what's being exhibited here. That's why it is that it's right and proper for saints that have means. Even Macedonia was in poverty, but there was a greater need in Jerusalem. And so he's telling them it's good for you to take part in this. It's not that you would ease others and you be afflicted, but it's for this idea of equality. You become, at this present time, verse 14, your abundance for their need, so that their abundance also may become for your need, so that there may be equality. And he quotes there from Exodus 16, he who gathered much did not have too much, and he who gathered little had no lack. That there was this sharing in this regard, so that everyone had what they needed. All right, the last section in chapter 8 deals with those who were messengers of this gift. So because Titus has been mentioned multiple times, we see here, I really asked the same question twice, but what does Paul commend Titus for in relation to this offering, and then what's said of each of these men? But what does Paul commend Titus for as it relates to this offering, as it relates to this work? He did it willingly of his own accord, that he accepted our appeal, but he did it willingly. And it was because of the fact of what he says in verse 16, that he gives the thanksgiving to God, that he put the same earnestness on our behalf in the heart of Titus. So you'll see throughout this, in the Corinthians and these other saints giving, the thanks goes to God for that, that it was God that supplied that. Here he talks about Titus and his willingness to help. He gives the thanks to God because he put this same earnestness in the heart of Titus. And so we see that Titus again was implored to go, complete this work that you started. But here he commends Titus because he did it so willingly. He did it out of his own desire that he went to be with them. What else is said of Titus in this section? Yeah, he describes him as his partner in this. In verse 23, he says, as for Titus, he's described these others, but as for Titus, it says, he is my partner and fellow worker among you. As for our brethren, they are messengers for the churches of glory to Christ. And so as it comes to Titus in this, he says, he's my partner. He's my fellow worker among you. What else had Titus done in what else have we read about of Titus in this letter? Yeah. Titus was the one that Paul had sent to find out how they were doing, how they responded to this first letter. And Titus is the one that had brought back report to Paul. We just talked about this in the last section, but in chapter 7, he talks about their struggle again in Macedonia. But God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus, and not only by his coming, but also by the comfort with which he was comforted in you, as he reported to us your longing, your mourning, your zeal for me, so that I rejoiced even more. And so Titus was close to Paul. We see that here. We see it in the letter that Paul writes to Titus. But he was close to Paul. He was his partner in this. He was engaged not only in this specific work, in this collection, this offering, but he also was the one that was sent to them. He was the one that brought back report to Paul. And he says God used that to comfort them. So we, again, just see this relationship, this closeness on behalf of Titus. Anything else about Titus? Certainly, about his earnestness for them, that certainly is an example for Corinth, that he's earnest for you and kind of urging them to follow through with that earnestness you had shown toward these other brethren. Certainly, we see that in Titus, another example here for Corinth. What about the one described as the appointed brother? Yeah, the third one, our brother was tested and found diligent. He talks about this appointed brother in verse 18 and 19, who we've sent along with him, the brother whose fame in the things of that the things of is added, but of the gospel spread throughout all the churches. So it's someone that's known. It's someone that is well known. He describes it as his fame in the gospel. It spread to the churches. But then also he says he's been appointed by the churches to travel with us in, again, this gracious work, which is being administered by us for the glory of the Lord himself and to show our readiness. So again, this is an individual that's known, and he's been appointed by the churches to travel with them. This third individual, our brother, as was said, was often tested and found diligent in many things. Verse 22, but now even more diligent because of his great confidence in you. And so here's the three people that Paul is sending. And why was it so important to mention so that they would know it wouldn't be mismanaged, so that others would know that it wouldn't be mismanaged, because this it certainly was an important work. Verse 19 talked about it was for the glory of the Lord. And so they went above and beyond as a precaution. Verse 20, taking precaution so that no one will discredit us in our administration of this generous gift. And verse 21, for we have regard for what is honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. And so these individuals that were known, these individuals that were trusted, these individuals that were proven, and there was agreement about this, talks about the fame in the churches, and it wasn't just Paul thought really highly of these people, but those that were chosen was all given, so that there'd be no question about this. They were messengers, verse 23, of the churches, a glory to Christ. And so we made with this a little bit of application more broadly, right? That we should be, whenever we're engaged in some work or even just our individual lives, we need to be sure that we're doing things that's honorable, not only in the sight of the Lord, but also in the sight of men. There's prudence in doing what Paul did here and involving other people that are known and proven in a work like this. So certainly a good example here. And then, yeah. Certainly.
It's also interesting to know that his example is more than one man involved in the sentence of court.
Yeah.
Another example that we're supporting a need of the churches might have more than one person be involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, not just a person that you trust, but ideally someone that other people trust. That was the case here, was that so that there'd be no question, right? Certainly, especially when it comes to a gift like this, we could see the potential, especially when there's people questioning Paul's authority as an apostle. There's people raising these accusations against him. But certainly, we see even today that often people try to discredit things. And if you've done your part to try to go above and beyond in that, and you kind of save yourself that and give people the peace of mind that are involved in the work. Anything else about that? All right, question four. What would be the proof of the Corinthians' love? Yeah, have it ready, get it together and do it. Right, them following through with what they started. They're keeping their promise, right? You've expressed this love. You began this work. You prove it by following through with that, doing as you said you would, doing it openly before the churches. You're proving not only your love, but you're proving our reason of boasting about you. That Paul's going to talk about this idea that he's boasted to the churches about Corinth and their eagerness and how they had begun this work. And so you prove that by following through with what you started. Any other comments, thoughts, questions about chapter 8? All right, chapter 9, Paul continues this. He gives his plea for liberality. He's given the examples in chapter 8. He's urged them to follow through, ultimately with their own example, that they had shown love. Now prove it. For the second time in this text, who does Paul identify as the recipient? The saints. He says, this ministry to the saints. And so, why does Paul say it was superfluous for him to write about this ministry? Yeah, he knew of their readiness. He knew of their zeal that had been demonstrated since last year. So Paul's writing to urge them to do this, but he's giving all these reasons to give. The example of Macedonia, the example of Christ, and here ultimately it's their own example. He says, yes, ma'am. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Verse 2, he says, for I know your readiness, of which I boast about you to the Macedonians, that Achaia has been prepared since last year, and your zeal has stirred up most of them. And so it's superfluous to write about this because I both know about your readiness and these other churches know about your readiness. And it's what motivated them to give as they had. And so they had set an example for this. They were ready for this. So it was superfluous for Paul to write. And question 3, asked and answered, but what was the result of the Corinthian zeal? It had stirred up most of their brethren to give. And what can we learn from this about influence? It's contagious, right? Both for good and for bad, right? Sometimes we can be a bad example. You think about the scene that Paul describes where he had to withstand Peter to his face, that he had played the hypocrite. And what we're told in that text is that these other brethren had engaged in that because of Peter, so that even Barnabas went along with it. Son of encouragement had gone along with it. So there's a great power of our influence, both for good and for bad. In this instance, it's a good influence. He talks about your eagerness and your zeal. It's made a change in other people because they saw or heard about this example in Corinth. You've got a people in Macedonia that out of their deep poverty are giving beyond their ability. That's how powerful that influence was. Any other thoughts about that? Yes, sir. Yes. Absolutely. Yeah, you've set this good example. He's going to come down later and say, now imagine if these individuals that you stirred up come and find that, well, you must not care like I was told you do because you haven't prepared this. And so certainly, yeah, both of those are there. He's going to use this as a strong motivator for Corinth. You've had this good influence. Now, imagine what that's going to do to those if that's not true about you. So certainly a powerful motivator is influence. Do you have a hand, Rocky? Again, in both the positive and the negative, yeah, that certainly, sometimes we or maybe often we don't realize how powerful that influence is. Yeah. Any other thoughts about that? Good lessons for us, even beyond the example of giving, but certainly here, they had been this encouragement. And I think to your point, Rocky, it's superfluous to write because I know about your attitude, but they might not have known about how strong of an influence they had had on the Macedonians. All right, so with all that in mind, we again kind of talked about this, but why had Paul sent brethren to them before his coming? Yeah, to get it ready so that there'd be nothing made when he got here, to arrange what they previously had promised. And what else? Yeah. To spare the shame of Paul and of Corinth. If these Macedonians, again, that had been so motivated by Corinth, come and find that these saints aren't ready, that that'd be an embarrassment to Paul. It'd be a shame to Corinth. But then also, like we said, just to arrange this. You've promised it. You've promised this gift. But I'm sending these people kind of as that motivator, that encouragement to follow through with that, to get it together. So keep your promise, keep your word, finish what you started. So Paul, again, is just motivating them in a number of different ways here in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and chapter 9. All right, question 5. I'm going to give this one to Keith. So explain the principle of Paul's teaching about giving through the illustration he uses in chapter 9 and verse 6. Keith's two favorite words from Wednesday, if you were here.
Grace. I think that was one of them.
Reaping and sowing? His three favorite words. He's talking about reaping and sowing. He talks about if you sow sparingly, you'll reap sparingly, but if you sow bountifully, you'll reap bountifully. He uses that here to illustrate this idea of their giving. So he gives, ultimately, in verse 7, the three kind of leading principles involved in this giving, summarizing a lot of what he said in these chapters already. But talk about each of these for just a moment. He talks about everyone must do just as he purposed in his heart. What's that have to do when it relates to giving? Yeah, attitude. There's thought and there's planning involved.
Will and planning.
So there's this purpose in the heart, that there's thought, that it comes from the heart. And so each one must do as he's purposed in his heart, but not grudgingly or under compulsion. Yeah. So again, tying into that idea about a command or not, but it's the idea that it's not because you're commanded. It's not because you feel forced into it. It's not, here says under compulsion. New King James says of necessity, that you're giving just because you have to, that you're giving grudgingly, that you're giving, but you really miss that money. You think about what I could have done with that. There's this negative aspect involved in that. And so the opposite of that, he says, God loves a cheerful giver. So you give with this attitude that you want to give. You're thankful that God has supplied the ability and the opportunity to give. And that we see that's always been the case, that God loves those that are cheerful in their giving, those that give willingly from the heart. Any other thoughts about those three things there? As he's purposed, not under compulsion, a cheerful giver. And that's just kind of an aside for that, but that's when the elders here have the budget meeting, it's a good thing to go to that, to know what the money's being given to, and in those meetings to have a say in that, to have a time to voice that, and I'm thankful to our treasurer that puts out monthly a report on what that money's gone to. That all plays into our giving with the purpose, as we've purposed in our heart. And not on that, don't give because the elders told you to. Don't give because you have to. Give because you want to take part in that work that we're doing, the men that we're supporting to preach the gospel. I know that if a benevolent need came up, that we'd be willing to give to that. There's other things involved in that as well. So that certainly all plays into this. Be involved in that. Know what you're giving to. It's not a tithe of the Old Testament where there's an amount you're expected to give and that's a continual thing. There's needs that are being met by that contribution. And so we should like he's urging Corinth. Be thankful that God's blessed us, that we have the ability to give to that work, that there's that opportunity to take part in that, and then for the work that is done as a result of that. And just one other thing, I talked about the budget meetings and the monthly reports, but also read the reports from the men that we currently support or have supported. Be mindful of the work that they're doing, the souls that are being impacted, that are Christians that are being encouraged, new saints that are being added through their work. So, again, this is the example for us. This is the only way we read of a New Testament church collecting money to do the work of the church. And so we want to follow through with that as well. And so good things to think about, especially in the first day of the week as we come together and have opportunity to give. That's the question number 7. And again, we've talked about this throughout, but in these verses he talks about it. But what's the relation of God's grace as it relates to our giving? Yeah, certainly. That he talks about in verse 8, that those five uses of the word all, that God's able to make all grace abound to you, or all blessing. He's always or at all times. You have all sufficiency in everything and abundance for every good deed and good work. It's not the promise of having a surplus or an abundance that if you give, God's going to bless you with that Ferrari you've always wanted or whatever. But it's the idea that he's going to meet your needs. That when you're, as Jesus even said in his words, as you're seeking first the kingdom, your necessities are going to be met. And how that happens, sometimes it's saints giving to you. There's other ways that God's able to make that happen. But here he talks about the grace of God. He's going to supply the need that's there. And he quotes here from the 112th Psalm, as it is written, he who scattered abroad, he gave to the poor. His righteousness endures forever. Who was the psalmist describing in Psalm 112? Yeah, the man who fears the Lord. And so he's talking about a number of ways that this man lives his life. But one of those is that he scattered, he gave to the poor, and his righteousness endures forever. And so there's this blessing involved in that as well. Verse 10, now he who supplies the seed to the sower and bread for food will supply and multiply your seed for sowing and increase the harvest of your righteousness. So again, it goes back to God. It results in the thanksgiving to God. It's God that supplies the ability of those who fear him to supply the needs of others. And so all of this results, he says, it's producing, verse 11, you will be enriched in everything for all liberality, which through us is producing thanksgiving to God. That God is being thanked as we think about this work. And so that certainly, again, relates back to the grace of God. For the third time in this letter, in these two chapters, who does Paul identify as the recipient? Talks about saints, fully supplying the needs of the saints. So question 10, it said, list at least four things which would be accomplished by the Corinthians following through with their generous giving. What would you put for that question? Yeah, fully supplying the needs of the saints. So that's certainly a benefit. You're taking care of this need that is there. That's accomplished by it. What else? Yeah, glorifying God is a result of that. Fellowship. Yeah, the liberality of your contribution. Yeah, thanksgiving. Many thanksgivings to God, verse 12. What else?
Prayer.
And so we listed several things there But certainly it results in God being glorified. It results in God being thanked. It results in supplying the need of saints. It results in prayers on your behalf, those that yearn for you because of the surpassing grace of God in you. It causes these that are receiving it, the proof of this ministry, they'll glorify God for your obedience to your confession of the gospel of Christ and for the liberality of your contribution to them and to all. So a lot of things are accomplished by this, even beyond the needs of the saints being supplied. That certainly is accomplished, but all this goes back to God. So why would the needy saints glorify God because of this gift from the Corinthians? Yeah, proof of their love for them, proof of their confession to the gospel as they're receiving these as brethren. They see the grace of God in them. So certainly glorifying God because of this work. And then finally, what is God's indescribable gift in this context? Okay, Jesus Christ is the gift. Salvation through Him, these things associated with Him. Certainly, all of that involved in this, that was the motivating factor that motivated Corinth and Macedonia, and as we read Galatia, to give to this, to supply the needs of their brethren. So certainly, throughout all of this, there is the benefit of supplying that physical need, but even beyond that, there's this bond that we have in Christ. There's this fellowship that we have. It strengthens that relationship between brethren. It certainly is a comfort to know that there's this bond in Christ, that when we might find ourselves in need, there's a comfort in knowing that one of the ways in which God supplies for our need is through brethren. And I would imagine, I don't know, but I know I've been on both sides of that. I've been able to give to others, and I've received gifts from those when I've been in need. And it's certainly just, it's a blessing that your needs are met, but certainly it strengthens that bond that we have as Christians. It strengthens that fellowship that we have, that it's more than just the money, and it's not just about the amount, it's about the heart behind it, that attitude that is there. And so again, hopefully, as we think about our giving, we keep these things in mind, that we're those that cheerfully give to continue the work of the church and to help those who are in need. Any final comments or questions before we wrap up? I would encourage you before Wednesday, read chapters 10 through 13. That's the final section that we'll be looking at. As Paul defends his apostleship, you're going to see he responds to those that are making these accusations. So different tone than we've seen in the letter. We've seen that, I think, in these three major sections, the way that Paul's writing. But hopefully we'll benefit from that study. We'll go through it a little bit quicker. We're coming to the end of the quarter here. But we'll have a few classes going through the text, and then we'll go through the questions, and then we have one class scheduled at the very end, that Wednesday in June, as a review. Just kind of talk about some things. If there's questions that you have, if there's things you want to discuss, come to class ready to that. If it's something you want me to address, reach out to me before. I can be prepared to talk about that. But we'll kind of use the class that way, that final class. I appreciate your participation.